So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
State Senator Fred Risser was first elected to the State Assembly in 1956, and when he leaves office in January of 2021, he will have served the total of 64 years. He's the longest-serving state legislator in the nation. He's the longest-serving state Senate president in Wisconsin, 25 years, and he's the, well, his honors and his achievements just go on and on. So it's a pleasure, Senator Risser, for you to join Wisconsin Eye for an exit interview, my friend. How are you today?
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, first question, when you were elected to the Assembly in 56, you took office in 57, did you think, Senator, you'd spend 64 years in the Wisconsin legislature?
No way. I entered the business as a part-time job, and I had intended to practice law and be over here for a couple months of the year and continue my law practice, which is my source of income. No way did I expect to be around this long. Time just goes pretty fast when you're having a good time.
You know what intrigues me? You told me, I interviewed you on your 90th birthday, and you told me that I think three Rissers have served in the legislature, but you're the first Democrat, right?
Well, there's four in my ancestry that have served.
Thank you for the correction. Go ahead.
And I am the first Democrat. Let me give you a brief. I'm a Democrat and have been. My dad was Fred Risser. Was served in the Senate for 12 years as a progressive, in the old progressive. In fact, he was the last progressive office holder in the state of Wisconsin. Progressives disbanded in 1946. He served till 1948. Before that, my maternal grandfather, Ernest Warner, served in the Assembly and was the author of the Civil Service Act back in 1905. And my grandfather, great-grandfather, Colonel Warner, who came back from the Civil War minus one arm, served in both the Senate and the Assembly, was elected as a Unionist at one time.
Wow.
So four parties, and they all represented this area. So this area changes parties as time goes, Unionist, Progressive Republican, Republican, Progressive, Democrat, the whole world.
Right. Okay. So why are you and why have you stayed a Democrat? Give us a short summary of that.
Basically, the liberals or the progressives have switched parties. At one time, the Republican Party in this area was very progressive, very liberal. And then the Republicans had total control of the state, everything. But it had a full tent. But when you have a full tent, you got conservatives and progressives in it. And the conservatives and progressives continued to fight. My grandfather, for instance, was a progressive Republican. And they kept fighting. And finally, they split up. The progressives decided they couldn't take over the Republican Party. They formed their own party, the Progressive Party. That went on for about 12 years, but they didn't have national attention, so it faded away. And the progressives, some of them went back in the Republican Party, and they were booted out. And so they all went to the Democratic Party. Now, the Democratic Party was quite conservative at that time. The progressives just took it over. When I started out, we had very conservative Democrats from Milwaukee. And the most conservative members of the legislature were Democrats, but the Democrats... the progressives sort of took over, and we had our first progressive governor, of course, in Gaylord Nelson, and that changed things. So the progressives, once were in the Republican Party, once were in the populist parties, and they moved now and they're in the Democratic Party. And that's the party that's the Progressive Party now. It may change in the future, but right now that's the place to be.
Well, let's talk about the current reality, Senator. When I talked to you to set this up, you said you hadn't been in your Capitol office since March because of the COVID threat. You at 93 are at risk, and I respect that. But how has COVID changed how you do your job as a state senator?
Well, we still are very active. In fact, we have a lot of constituent activity right now, and employment, unemployment benefits. And I have a staff of two people, and we all write by phone. We communicate every morning about between 8 and 9 and go over the agenda for the day, and we communicate during the day. It's all done virtually actually, we're accomplishing for the constituency as much now as we ever did, maybe more. We have a lot of activity going on, and we're full-time in the legislature.
Yeah, but don't you miss the retail politics, the handshaking, the leading tours, things like that?
It's a different world, and I do miss that. I miss it very much, but times have changed, and you got to roll with the waves.
Will you be sad if you are, because of the COVID threat, unable to get back into your office when your term ends in January?
There's no question I'll be not upset, but I'll miss it. I had a really rough time deciding to not run again, but I figure this way. I'm 93, and maybe I should spend a little more time at home. And quite frankly, the situation has changed. I entered this job as a part-time job, and it's become more full-time. And in fact, the majority of legislators now consider themselves full-time. I never wanted to go into full-time politics. I always wanted to be in part-time politics, but the legislature has become full-time, so I'm moving on.
You had a lot of options, sir, to run for higher office, Congress, or statewide. Why did you never do that?
You're right. I had those options because I turned them down or didn't follow through on it because I didn't want to go into full-time politics. My dad always talked about being a part-time politician, helping out society and the democracy as a part-time job. He used to tell me, you know, if you become a full-time politician, times change. You maybe can't afford to lose, or maybe you become a little more susceptible to the pressures. If you're a part-timer, you can tell people to go jump in the lake if you don't like what they're doing and go back to your work. You're more independent, and I wanted to be independent.
Well, at some point, was it in the 70s or 80s that the Assembly and Senate went from being part-time to full-time? Was that not a wise move, Senator?
Well, you know, they ran a survey, and they say it's 80% full-time.
Okay.
I think there's arguments both ways. Professionalism has become more professional, and some people, as a full-time legislators, can accomplish quite a bit. Others are dead wood. I think it's half and half. I think constituency has asked for more actions than they used to, and so we have staff. Where when I started out, there was no staff, there was no rooms. We just came over to the Capitol for a couple of months, and we had a secretarial pool. But if you were a senior, you never got used as a secretary. Never got to use the secretarial pool. You never had a telephone. You'd had to ask the sergeant to use his phone if you wanted to call out. It's a different world, and I've moved ahead with it, but I've always thought part-time politics was for me, not full-time, and that's one reason I turned down these other jobs.
I looked it up, sir. From 1957 to now, former Governor Kohler to Governor Evers, you've served with 14 governors,
13,
Senator.
13, six, seven Democrats and six Republicans.
And who was the most effective governor, Senator?
I think all of them, except for the last one, had the state of Wisconsin first in their minds. I've been dealing with all the governors. I've had good friendships with the governors. I think they've been excellent. I think the last governor was more interested in the future, his own activity. But I think all the other governors had their state's best interest. And I would say that they all gave they're all to. I like them all.
You're not going to answer my best governor question, are you, sir?
Oh yeah. Okay. You said what do I think? I think. I think that all the governors have been good. You know,
most effective.
Yeah. Well, most effective. Obviously, Thompson was in the longest, and so okay. You have to give him. I think that Lucy was extremely effective. He was the first four-year term governor. You know, the governors used to have two-year terms, and I quite think that was a mistake. I mean, I'm glad they improved it to 4 years, because in 2 years, no sooner you get elected, you start running for re-election, and you don't have time to move your program. So Lucy was the first four-year term governor, and I think he was very effective. I think that Knowles, as a part-time governor, served several years, was very effective. I think Nelson, obviously, was very effective. He served several terms. I go down the list, I could call them all, and I think they all had an effect. I can't say that one was worse than the other, except I will say that the last governor, in my opinion, had other ideas rather than the state of Wisconsin. He was more interested in national conference activities, and so he developed a budget that he thought would work nationally and did not work statewide. So I think his budget showed that he was more interested in the national outlook rather than the state outlook. The other governors, I think, had the state Wisconsin first.
At the state Republican Party convention, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said this about Governor Evers. He was a reluctant candidate, and he's not up to the job. Do you want to respond to that on behalf of the Democratic governor, sir?
Well, I don't know how reluctant he was. He won. And I think this, he's done a much better job than I originally anticipated. He's sort of held back. He's not as verbose as some governors and not as active. But I've been very impressed with his approach. I've been very impressed with his interest in education. I've been very impressed with his interest in health and his and interest in protecting the citizens of this state. I think he has a progressive viewpoint, which I like. I think that Fitzgerald is just talking politics. He would say that to any Democrat. But I think Evers has done a much better job than many people anticipated. I'm impressed by him, and I think if he could have some help in the legislature, he'd make have an excellent tenure.
When I did an exit interview with Senator Olson, who you served with for a number of years, he said that Governor Evers went up against two professional politicians and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Voss. Do you agree with that?
Well, certainly. Voss and Fitzgerald are professional politicians. They have great ambitions. I don't think that Evers, when he was started at Superintendent of Public Instruction, felt at that time he was going to be governor, but he has moved into that spot, and I think he's done a very good job, much better job than I originally anticipated.
Well, looking back over 64, what will be 64 years when you leave office, can you isolate one or two proudest moments? You have been working on Capitol buildings and constructions. You're the author of the smoking ban. You're a champion of the UW. Can you give us your thought on one or two or three proudest moments, sir?
You know, I knew you were going to ask that question, and I tried to think of how I'd answer it. And I'll tell you this, it depends on the issue. For instance, on women's issues, I was given the Lifetime Award by Planned Parenthood for a number of issues. I took contraceptives off the indecent article list. When it comes to environment, I have won every environmental award that's possible. I helped organize the Gaylord Nelson Park, put together the property from the YMCA in Reynolds personally, and helped develop that. If you talk about the UW, my gosh, I've over 50 years in the building commission. Every building they've had in the last 50 years, I've had my fingerprints on. The city of Madison, I take credit for bringing government back downtown. The Jeff buildings, just it didn't happen. The Jeff buildings involved bringing the city of Madison, bringing the government back downtown. Remember, Gaylord Nelson wanted to move the government back to the Hill Farms area, and that building was put up with idea. I thought it was a mistake because I thought all that traffic back and forth didn't justify it. And with Governor Knowles and Lucy and others, we developed a plan, Luckman Associates, and we actually had to buy up three blocks in the city of Madison. Now that wasn't easy. And we had to actually use eminent domain to get some of that property. But we got the blocks in that building through the building commission and through the governor's assistance. And also in the city of Madison, I take great credit. I was co-authors of the state master plan that redeveloped the Capitol over a 10-year period. It makes it one of the most beautiful capitals in the United States. So as I say, it depends on which issue it's on labor, for instance. When I was chairman of the Joint Committee on Finance, by the way, I was the youngest chairman of Joint Committee on Finance back in 1958. In my second term, I was the assembly chairman. Anyway, with Gaylord Nelson, we put together the first, I think it was the first law allowing state employees to actually organize. And of course, our last governor did a good job of cutting that up. Another reason I didn't like him too much. But So it depends on the issue. One bill that besides the Clean Air Act that I think is a wonderful bill, took 40 years to get through. Was a bill.
How many years did it take through to get the smoking ban in?
I introduced a bill back in 1962 to outlaw smoking to those under the age of 14. See, you could smoke at any age. And I remember going to the theaters, and they smoked in the theaters, and I didn't have to move around because I didn't like the theater smoke. And you could smoke at any age back when I started out. I introduced a bill in 1962, for first year in the Senate, and to outlaw smoking under the age of 14. The bill went to the Judiciary Committee, which I was a member. It was defeated 5-1. My one, the others all were against it. And so it was fighting the liquor lobby, the restaurant lobby, and
Tavern League, I imagine.
We fought that off, and so we went around and I was author of the bill to take smoking out of the state capitol, but that came later. But I introduced bills for almost 40 years. In fact, just this year, we celebrated the 10th anniversary of the Clean Indoor Air Act, which was adopted, and that was about 40 years after I got started. But
next winter will be the 10-year anniversary of Act 10. You were one of the 14 Senate Democrats that left the state. What are your thoughts in hindsight? Would you leave the state again to delay or try to defeat Act 10?
Well, at that time, I think it was appropriate. I wouldn't do it again, no.
You would not? Why?
Why? Well, I think once is enough.
okay.
You know, Lincoln did that. Lincoln jumped out of the window and he was in the state legislature in Springfield and to eliminate a quorum. So it wasn't something that was unique. As they say, Lincoln as a Republican did the same thing. And I think at the time, it was appropriate, and it brought out a very important issue. But I don't think you need to use that same tactic again. And I wouldn't use it again, but I think it was justified at the time.
You voted last week to restore the two statues that were toppled by the protesters in June. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. President Trump refers to protesters who destroy property as anarchists. What are your feelings about those protests? Those were a new level of violence and looting that we hadn't seen, but the president calls them anarchists. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't. He uses a big brush. I suppose there's a few of them in, but I think protests are certainly justified, and protests have resulted in improvements in our country. The Voters Aid Act that Congress passed was a result of protests. I see nothing wrong with protests, but I don't think they have to get nasty. We have a lot of protests. I live on the Capitol Square, and I see protests practically every weekend, and most of them are very peaceful, and they're worthwhile. But I don't think that they have to go about interfering with people's liberty and property. I think that the looting is uncalled for in our society. We don't accept that as a reasonable way of going at things. And I think that it's a mistake to tear down buildings and to loot. And I think that may be a few people that are doing that. Some people think that maybe Trump has a couple people involved in that just to get the publicity. I don't. They're not all anarchists. There are a few probably, but the majority of them are justifiable, and the protests do serve a purpose.
Are you worried as the violence in Portland, Seattle, Louisville, other cities become more violent? Are you worried for our democracy, Senator?
Well, I would say this. I think protests are justified, and peaceful protests are justified, and I think peaceful protests accomplish a lot, have accomplished, and can accomplish things. I think you have a very small element that sometimes gets involved and takes over a peaceful movement and turns it into a more radical movement. These individuals that are out to cause trouble, regardless I think are detrimental to society. And I think that the local units of government can handle it without the federal government coming in. I think it's a mistake. I think Trump does it just to get the publicity out of it and make a lot of noise, but the local units of government can handle it and have handled it. And I think they should be allowed to act on it. And, I think we've done pretty good. It once in a while gets out of hand, but everything can get out of hand once in a while.
You talked about the evolution from part-time legislators to 80% or full-time. What are some of the other two or three biggest changes in the legislative process that you've seen in recent decades, sir?
I have seen some changes. When I joined the Senate, it was a white man's body. No women, no minorities had been. For over 100 years, the Senate was completely white men. Now we have almost a third to half women. We have minorities. So one of the biggest changes is the diversity in membership. And I think that's good. Another thing is it's become more full-time, and that's debatable. I think it's good for some people, and it's not good for others. I think that it's still a little archaic in some of their procedures, which we should update, but it's gradually coming along. This virus has helped make people think about updating the process a little bit. The biggest change, I think, is that it has become extremely partisan. I can remember that you had very progressives in both Democratic and Republican parties. I can remember the most conservatives being in the Democratic Party and also in the Republican Party. And we used to have, until about 10 years ago, our budgets always contained both Democrats and Republicans participating in the budgetary process. In the last several years, it's been straight party line vote. You are one, if your party's in control, you have to get the budget, you get your people together, the other side always goes the other way. I think the partisanship has extremely changed the makeup. Also the power of leadership. Leadership takes over and doles out the money and in return gets support from their membership. And there's not as much independent activity as there used to be. I can remember, we used to have an opportunity to get processes through easier, I think, when it was not so partisan as we do now. So those are the main things I've seen.
I remember when you were one of what I used to call the big three in the Senate that would determine committee assignments. You, the majority leader and the co-chair of finance. So now that pretty much power is rested in one person, the Senate majority leader, correct?
Yeah. And that was my idea. In fact, when I was minority leader, we had an argument as to how we're going to sign things. So I figured that if we had the three senior members of the caucus together, that they would be considered respectful enough. And so that was my idea, and that worked quite well. We call it Committee on Committees. And we used to have the three senior members. Then we added the minority leader, then we added other people, and that party sort of fell apart and then became leadership only, one person, which I don't really like. But that was an evolutionary process, and I think another idea, the difference in the legislature, it used to be really part-time. You had no staff, no male. And now we have every room, every legislator has a room of their own. Every legislator has a staff person of their own. And that also builds up the partisanship, I think. But it changes, and you have to roll with the waves.
Well, what about the caucus scandal? What lessons came out of that? And are the abuses highlighted by the caucus scandal by both parties, are they gone?
Well, people change. I mean, the legislature changes. And so maybe one legislature will have a certain group of people and another legislature will have we can't talk about what's going to happen in the future because we don't know. I think that there's more openness in some respects than there was in the past. We have open records, which we never had before. We still have our private caucuses, which we've always been. In answer to your question, I don't think we've seen the end of anything. And I don't think he's seen the beginning of necessarily everything. So times do change, and what's going to happen in the future is up to the membership of the future. I don't really know.
You had a fascinating practice. Every day on your birthday, you would ride your bike that number of years you were celebrating. How far did you make it?
I made it through 91.
91, okay.
I made 91 miles on my 91st birthday, but then I got into a little accident, and a car and myself wanted the same road at the same time, and so I'm not biking as much as I used to.
You also, when you advised incoming legislators from both parties, you said, use the steps, not the elevator. Why?
I feel very strongly on that. You know, you do a lot of sitting, and in the years I've been in the Capitol, I've never taken the steps. I've always taken the elevator. And even when I was on crutches, I'd take up the steps. Never take the elevator, because you sit so much. And the easiest, cheapest exercise is walking up and down the steps. You know, you only have one body, and you couldn't do anything without that body, and you got to take a little care of it. And one way to take care of it is to get a little exercise. If you're doing your job and sitting in committee hearings for 8-10 hours, you just got to get exercise. How do you do it? Walking up and down the steps is the easiest, simplest, cheapest way of doing it. And it's a good way.
How much more power do lobbyists have in 2020 than they had when you entered the legislature in the 1950s?
I don't know if their power has changed much.
Okay.
Lobbyists have always been powerful, and they still are today. They use different tactics. When my dad was in the legislature, the lobbyists would buy meals and drinks openly. And they used to have a spot at the Lorraine Hotel. Any legislator could go over there and eat. The lobbyists would always pick it up, and you knew who the lobbyist was. Now they're not supposed to do that. But the lobbyists raise campaign funds, and money has become more and more important. When I ran, originally I didn't have to worry about money. I figured that I'd spend maybe 1 year's salary, and that would be it, win or lose. And that my own money. I never had a campaign contribution in the assembly at all. Never did until when I started running for the Senate, someone started giving me money, and I asked, what for? Well, don't you want some money? Well, yeah. So anyway, we used to run races without asking money. Now the lobbyists, as I say, pull together funds, and campaigns are becoming extremely important. We didn't have TV, for instance, when I started out to speak of. Right. Now people use TV. Postcards cost a penny. Now they cost a lot more than a penny. And things are different. And money is becoming more and more significant, I think. Money's always been significant, but the lobbyists have their ways, and that's why they're lobbyists. And I think
are you satisfied they're no longer buying drinks and meals for lawmakers, Senator?
Well, you know, they have. I can remember one lobbyist saying, "You know, I can't buy you a drink." He says, "But see that person down the aisle there? He wants to buy you a drink."
I see.
We can rent from him, you know.
Well, yeah.
You didn't take it from the lobbyist; you took it from some stranger that you never heard of, but lobbyist friend. I mean, that's illegal, but they find their ways.
Why does serving in the legislature pose so many temptations for outstate lawmakers who don't have to go home every night? You've seen some marriages ruined by people coming down here. Why is it so tempting for outstate legislators?
Well, you'd have to speak to them, I suppose. For me, I live right across the street from the Capitol, 4 minutes from my bedroom to the Capitol.
Yep.
And it's wonderful. I get home every night. Legislators don't get home every night, and they have to find something to do. You know, when I started out, the movie theaters used to give free movie passes because keep the legislators off the streets. We don't get those free passes anymore. We used to get free passes to the football games, baseball games, but that's illegal, and they don't do that anymore. But as an out-of-state legislator, outstate legislator, I should say, they have to find some time. Some of them have second homes down here, practically. I remember one legislator telling me that one thing that kept his marriage happy was that he was away from home some of the time down here. Another is people want to get home. It's a human thing, I guess, and individuals are treated differently. I've been very fortunate. I think being a legislator from Madison is a wonderful opportunity, and I wanted it as a part-time job, and I never really wanted to get into full-time politics because I just didn't want to be bound by having to win. I wanted to be independent enough so I could do what I thought was right.
Two final questions. Do you have any regrets, sir?
No, none whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
I probably regret the fact that my father didn't live long enough, longer. He died at 71, and I would like to have had him around to have watched my progression. He was very happy with me. He'd been in the legislature, and he'd been district attorney, and he'd come from a political family, and I wish he'd have been around to have witnessed it, but that's not something I had any control over.
And your advice for the next senator from the 26th, sir?
Well, you know, there's a lot to the legislature other than passing bills. I think you have to, your advice, of course, is you've got to get along. First impressions are very important. When a legislature comes in, people give snap impressions of you. And so first impressions are very important. You should get along with your friends, and I would say communicate with as many people, but you're representing your constituents. One thing I've taken very proud of is I've never turned a person down that wanted to talk to me. It may be take a while, but regardless of who they were or what they wanted to talk about, if they wanted to see me, I've told my staff, find a way to get them in to see me. And so I have feel that you've got to listen. That's what we're there for. We're representative of people to make our democracy work. We select representatives. Those representatives are supposed to listen to their constituency. And I've tried to do that. And fortunately, I've had a couple of elections without opposition, which I think I'm very honored by it. And I think partly because of listening. By the way, I've probably voted on 50 to 60,000 issues. Everyone knows where I stand, and I don't hide where my positions are. But I'll talk to anyone on any subject.
Remember, Governor Dreyfus said what? Madison is what, 30,000 acres surrounded by reality? I probably got the number wrong, but here's my question. Is Madison a lot more liberal than the rest of the state?
Yes.
And Why?
We have the University of Wisconsin that helps. We have the state government that helps. People around this area are more, attuned to what's going on. And so they have to be more progressive if they're attuned to what's going on, because you want to move ahead. The people used to have two active newspapers here, three at one time, four or five. Anyway, people in this area are close to state government, so they know what's going on. You have the university with the people coming in with ideas from all over the world, which is wonderful. It's a great institution too. It's the heart of the state in many respects. And so yes, we are more progressive here, and that we should be. And the rest of the state should catch up to us. Maybe the rest of the state is a little behind. We're just where we should be.
Okay, final question, I promise. The social media, bad or good for our democracy and the political process, the emergence and the dominance of social media, Senator?
You know, you're asking one who's coming into social media slow. I still have some problems with it. I have trouble with this push-button society. Because you push the wrong button, everything goes wrong. And I just having difficulty, I guess, in following the social media. And I think maybe I should attune myself more to it. But quite frankly, I was raised in an area where you didn't have the social media have now, and the button pushing society is difficult for me. It took a while for me to really get to know how to use an iPhone, and I still have limited capability on it. I admit it, but I was raised in a different era. And I think these young kids, four-year-olds, know much more about it than I do. And it's wonderful that we can treat them that way. It's a great life, and it's a wonderful time I've had in it, and enjoy it, and I hope that the life and our democracy continues on for the future.
Democratic Senator Fred Risser, who in January, when he leaves office, will have served 64 years in the Wisconsin legislature, Congratulations, sir. Longest serving state lawmaker in the nation. Congratulations on a very successful career. And thanks for doing the exit interview, and good luck, sir.
You bet. See you. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.